When I was a kid, age 10 or so, I got my hands on a pair of large inflatable feet. They were like beach balls, except they were foot-shaped, and each had a hole in the top where you could put your own feet. They were really like large inflatable clown shoes. And the idea was that a person could put them on and walk on the top of the water. I was very excited to try them. Who wouldn't want to walk across the top of the water? And for me as a 10-year-old, that was a superpower. I mean, just all the, wow, walking out on the water. So, I inflated the feet, and I took them down to the water's edge, and I gave it a shot. And you will be happy to know, it didn't work. Didn't even come close to working. Even though I probably at the time weighed less than 100 pounds, I just sank. Just sank right down, and the feet went into the trash. That experiment was a total failure. Today, we read from the Gospel of Matthew, the account of Jesus walking on water on the Sea of Galilee. Back in 1999, I was also on the Sea of Galilee. I was traveling with a group of ministers on a tour of the Holy Land. And the tour included the region of Galilee and even a boat ride out onto the Sea of Galilee, which is really just a big lake. We were about a half mile offshore in the northern section of the lake, which is the area where Jesus had lived. And suddenly the motor on the boat goes quiet. And the tour guide announces that we are having engine trouble, and to get back to shore, we're going to have to walk. Tour guide humor, yes. We all laughed. Well, we all laughed except for the one Pentecostal charismatic faith-healing preacher who said that he could walk on water if the rest of us just believed hard enough. We pushed him over. In our reading today, Jesus sends the disciples across the lake by boat while he walks up a hill to pray. He is alone. The disciples out on the lake are caught in a storm, and the winds push them away from the shore that they're trying to get to. And this goes on all night. And early in the morning, after they have been fighting the storm for hours, paddling and rowing, the disciples spot Jesus walking toward them across the water. He's wearing these huge inflatable feet. No, he's not. But the disciples are terrified. And they are sure that they are seeing a ghost. But Jesus speaks to them and says, "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." Peter steps forward and responds, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus calls Peter, saying, "Come." So, Peter climbs over the gunwale of the boat, steps out into the water. He walks towards Jesus until he notices the winds, the powerful, raging winds that are around him, and he gets scared, and he begins to sink. And he shouts out, "Lord, save me!" And Jesus reaches out his hand and grabs him, saying, "You of little faith! Why did you doubt?" They climb into the boat together, and the winds and the storm subsides. And the disciples in the boat, they declare, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Now, the time-honored approach to this passage is to view it as a story about faith and lack of it. Jesus walks across the water to the boat and calls Peter to come to him. Peter goes towards Jesus in faith, but is distracted by the wind, and his faith wavers, and he sinks. And through the telling of this story, Matthew would seem to be telling his congregation to stay faithful in Jesus, to push all their doubts to the side, to keep their eyes on the prize, to acknowledge that Jesus truly is the Son of God. Do that, and you can walk on water. Now, I'm sure you've heard that sermon preached on more than one occasion. It's a good sermon. But as I've been doing over the past couple of weeks, I ask that together we consider the context of this particular passage and maybe see it in a different light. As you will recall from last week, John the Baptist has recently been executed by Herod. And upon hearing this news, Jesus set out to be alone, but the crowds followed him. He has compassion on these crowds, and he heals the sick that are among them. And then he feeds them, 5,000 people, more if you count the women and children. And the disciples are with him, and they're distributing the food and collecting the food and dealing with the people, and no doubt they worked hard all day. And if I were to guess, I would say that this event with the 5,000 people probably lasted more than just one day. I mean, it would be hard to get 5,000 people to a remote area and in and out in one day. I'm sure they were there for a couple of days, which means the disciples had been working longer. So, after dismissing the crowds, Jesus sends the disciples ahead by boat, telling them he will catch up with them later. He can walk around the end of the lake. Jesus then goes up a hill to pray. If we look at the story in this context, we will understand that more than likely, these disciples are at this point physically and emotionally exhausted. They've been caring for this crowd for several days and fighting the storm all night and rowing and paddling to get back to shore. They're tired, they're worn out, they're spent. They have been battered by the waves and the wind has been against them. And to anyone who's been in a boat in a storm, this is a challenging, scary situation. And then, on top of all this, at the height of their exhaustion, this figure appears in the storm, strolling through the waves. It's got to be a ghost, doesn't it? That's the only explanation. But the figure speaks to them and says, "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." And they realize that it is Jesus. And with those words, Jesus is not so much denying that he is a spirit, but he seems to be making three assertions. First, be strong. Second, I am here. Third, do not be afraid. And that second assertion, I am here, can also be translated as I am. And I am is certainly an echo of the name that God reveals to Moses from the burning bush. Moses is talking to the burning bush and asks, "Who shall I tell the people that you are? What is your name?" And God says, "Tell them that I am sent to you." So to anyone who is in distress, sinking in the sea or whatever, these are powerful words. Be strong. I am God with you, and do not be afraid. And Peter's stepping out onto the water is not so much a matter of faith, but it is his desire to be with the one that he calls Lord, the I am. Too often we interpret this as Peter's display of his faith, and then we see his doubt. But I think he just wants to be with God. And then, as we read, when he realizes the storm continues to blow, he gets scared and Jesus reaches down and pulls him up. But calling Peter one of little faith, I don't see as an admonition of Peter's failure to believe, but an acknowledgement of the lack of faith that we're all guilty of. Why did you doubt? Jesus asks. And he seems a little surprised. Didn't you realize that I am is always with you? And then once in the boat with the Lord, the storm ceases to exist. We can look at this as a story of doubt and faith, but we can also view it as a powerful reminder that God is always present in our lives, even at the lowest points, when we are exhausted and beaten, when the world has taken everything from us. For example, there are times when I feel great, when I feel like I could walk on water, everything's going perfectly. But there have been a few times when the only thing that I see is darkness and despair. And sadly, many of us are too familiar with these times of darkness and exhaustion and even hopelessness. And maybe it stems from an illness or a debilitating condition. Maybe it is due to a trying relationship or a betrayal. It could be based in an addiction. Maybe it stems from your work or a terrible loss in your life or something else. Matthew is telling his people, Matthew's telling us, that even in these dark times, that God is with us, walking through the storm to reach out and catch us, to pull us up from where we are sinking. Thomas Andrew Dorsey was born in Georgia in 1899. His father was a Baptist preacher and his mother was a piano teacher. And early on, it became evident that young Thomas was a talented musician. And as a musician later in life, Dorsey would combine African-American church hymns with blues and jazz. His music at the time was controversial, but it set the tone for what would become known to us as gospel music. At age 16, Dorsey moved to Chicago to study music. He also started playing in nightclubs around the city and was immensely popular. In 1928, his life changed, and he became active at the Pilgrim Baptist Church in Chicago, and he served as the church's choir director for 40 years. In his musical career, he wrote over 1,000 jazz, blues, and gospel songs. He formed his own publishing company. Dorsey was the first African-American elected to the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. His musical archives are housed at Fisk University. When Dorsey was 32 years old and recently married, he and his wife were living in Chicago. One day in August, he needed to go to St. Louis, where he was the featured soloist at a large revival meeting. His wife, Nettie, was in her last month of pregnancy with their first child. Reluctantly, he went to St. Louis at this time. As he finished the revival, a Western Union telegram was brought to him, informing him that his wife had died. She had given birth to a baby boy, but the child did not live but a couple of days. The two were buried together in the same casket. Dorsey writes that following their deaths, he fell apart. He locked himself up. He was angry at God. He wrote, "I felt that God had done me an injustice. I didn't want to serve him anymore or write gospel songs. I just wanted to go back to that jazz world I once knew so well." Friends reached out to him, and he writes, "I was lost in grief. Everyone was kind to me." Finally, he sat down at the piano and composed a song. The song that emerged from this terrible despair was, "Precious Lord, take my hand. Precious Lord, take my hand. Lead me on, let me stand. I'm tired, I'm weak, I'm lone. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on to the light. Take my hand, precious Lord, lead me home. When my way grows drear, precious Lord, linger near. When my light is almost gone, hear my cry, hear my call. Hold my hand, lest I fall. Take my hand, precious Lord, lead me home." When the darkness appears, and the night draws near, and the day is past and gone, at the river I stand, guide my feet, hold my hand. Take my hand, precious Lord, lead me home. Dorsey wrote this song and gave it to a friend. The following Sunday, the song was performed at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, where the pastor was Martin Luther King Sr. The song became a favorite of King Jr. It has been recorded by countless people, including Mahalia Jackson, Aretha Franklin, Elvis Presley, Chet Atkins, and more. It was sung at King's funeral. It was also sung at the state funeral of President Lyndon Johnson. In this song, we hear clearly the grief which pours from great loss and sadness. But we also hear the powerful recognition that God is still there, always reaching out, taking us by the hand, hauling us up into the boat. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on to the light. This story in Matthew of Jesus walking on water is not a message about discipleship or service or how we are to love our neighbors. It's not about keeping God's laws or obeying God's commandments. It's not how we can better serve God. It's not about anything that we can do. It is simply a declaration that God cares for us, that God watches over us, and even when we are drowning in life's despairs and have given up on God, God is there waiting to take us by the hand and lead us home. And for this, we can be truly thankful.